Oh, to be football fans? Enjoying our content? Well, we've got something you might like. Our latest series, Inner Drive, which is with some of Ireland's leading athletes, is out now and you can listen to it for free. One of Ireland's greatest athletes and Paralympic champion swimmer, Ellen Keane, spoke to Nathan Murphy about her career and her hopes for her final Paralympic Games in Paris. It's all in partnership with Allianz Insurance, proud sponsor of Paralympics Ireland. The Paralympics are underway, so check it out.
The whistle is blown and you stand on the block and everything is silent. Like 18,000 people in one room, everyone's silent. You're just telling yourself confident, powerful thoughts and telling yourself how good you are and how you can do it and have fun. That's one thing that I keep telling myself, is to have fun. And I keep telling myself how strong I am. Go. And then you dive. And then you're in the water and then you just go and pedal for leather and trying to get to the wall as fast as possible. You hear something. You don't hear much. You hear muffled cheers. And you don't know if it's for you, if it's for someone else. You don't know if the cheers are because you're doing well or because you're doing badly. So you just gotta keep going.
Ellen, we're here at the Central Remedial Clinic in Clontarf. Where it all started?
The CRC, yeah. This is where it all started.
Your first ever swim?
My first ever swim. I learned to swim here when I was like 2 years old. So I have older siblings. I have a sister who's 7 years older than me and two brothers who are twins who are 2 years older than me. And I basically got in the water when they got in the water. So I was really young. I was probably about 2 years old.
Feel free throughout this to smack me around the head if I ask you a stupid question.
Okay.
How much harder is it to learn to swim with one arm?
So learning to swim with one arm, I didn't notice any difference. And I think that was purely because of the teachers that I had. So I had a guy called Paul and another guy called Peter. And I don't recall ever being treated any differently. I remember I really loved backstroke. And that wasn't because of my arm. It was because I struggled with the breathing aspect of from crawl. And then I remember one of them was sick. So I had like a substitute teacher come in and it was a woman. And she instantly saw my arm and she was like, oh, we have to put an armband on her. And then I was treated like I couldn't swim. And obviously when you're a kid and something like that happens and I was still so young, I didn't really know how to deal with it, so I just did as I was told and I was really upset about it. And then my mom afterwards like gave out to the woman, and because it like I didn't need it, she just automatically saw I was disabled and assumed I couldn't do something. And it was actually harder for me to swim like that than it was without.
I could see she was struggling even with the band on, and I was very annoyed because I thought that would undermine her confidence and it would make her a step back from how she was progressing. And she wasn't having any problem getting her head under the water, never did from day one. Like she, the first day she was put on the beach, she ran straight into the sea. I was very annoyed and one of the other coaches said, you know, don't worry, that's the way, she's just a bit overprotective, it won't happen again. I said, you're right, it won't happen again.
Your parents, understandably, so proud of you. They do seem to be really positive people, and listening to them talking about you from a very young age and even from when you were born, like it was clear they were going to treat you the exact same as your brothers and sisters,
yeah.
That they were going to throw you into everything, that they weren't going to let anything sort of hold you back. Were you aware of that at a very young age, that actually they could have taken a different route? There probably are families out there who too take a different route, who go, actually, no, listen, you have a disability, you're going to have to approach different things in a different way, whereas they seem to go,
no, I didn't realise it when I was a kid that my parents were so optimistic and my parents were so, like, nothing fazed them. And I only really realised that when the more I swam and the more I was involved in para sport, because you would meet so many different people with disabilities. And because of para sport, you would understand, because of the classification system, what their level of impairment is. And you could meet someone whose level of impairment isn't that bad based on the classification system. They could be closer to able-bodied than disabled, but they're incapable of being independent. And that's because of the way their parents had bubble wrapped them as kids and taught them that they always need help and taught them that they can't do things on their own. That's really, really, really scary. So I'm so grateful that my parents never had that mindset. Because if they didn't, I wouldn't be who I am. I wouldn't have the independence that I have. And as much as they probably regret it, and they're like, no, don't be too independent.
Well, because I've heard your dad talk about, like, it was literally a shock to the system when you were born. This was not expected. It had not come up in any scans or anything. Yeah. So they're in the delivery room, and this is the first day doctors, anybody knows about it. So, like, they haven't had that even time to process this when they're bringing you home.
Oh, it was crazy. When Ellen was born, when she was delivered and she came out and her arm was pumping, it was pulsing like that. The nurse said, oh, the doctor will be in to sort that out. So I expected the doctor to come in with a knife and to cut her there and for her arm to pop out.
Quite a few scans, because she nearly miscarried twice. So they were doing more scans nearer the longer I was pregnant. So I was very surprised that they didn't pick up something. I was talking to the doctor and he hadn't got much. I said, why? No answers, you know, so just one of these things that happened. So that's kind of the way we were left with it.
But that's life. You just get on with it. Like, we accepted it there and then. And it was hard in the beginning, very hard trying to get help, because we didn't know anyone or anything like this before.
She was always a fighter from, as I say, even when before she was born. She was a baby. I loved her. She was mine.
What's the best thing about your success been?
I wouldn't say it's about my success. I guess the best thing about my career has been, because of sport, I see myself as a strong disabled woman. Whereas I think if I didn't do my sport and I didn't stay in my sport for as long as I did, I could have back problems because of my disability. I could see myself as weak because of my disability. I probably would have a lot less independence because of my disability. And that's because, like, my arm is one part of me, but the rest of my body is so strong that I have no problem doing things myself. And I rarely ask for help. So I guess that's the biggest win that I've gotten from my career.
We had three children before Ellen, and with Ellen, she just got on with it and did everything exactly the same as the others. We never even think of that girl with the one arm is our daughter. Just, that's our daughter, you know? And we never thought anything different of her. Never.
I'm just amazed at the things that she's able to do, like putting curlers in, and there's nothing stops her. She makes her own way to do things.
The move from swimming and going as a two-year-old, just because it's a life skill that you need to... becoming an athlete who, you know, 11 years later is going to a Paralympic Games at 13. When does the switch from just learning how to swim and going there and meeting people to, actually, I'm quite good at this?
It's funny because in my head, it actually was a switch. It was like one day I remember my dad coming to me and saying, is this what you want to do? And me being like, yes. And that was the answer. And then it was just go, go, go from there. So I didn't really like... I loved being in the water as a kid, in and out of the sea. But when it came to pool swimming, I don't know, I just kind of got bored with it. And I hated what came with swimming as well. So like the wet hair, the drying of the hair. And I think every young girl knows the awfulness of having your hair brushed and all the like leave-in conditioner to get the knots out of your hair. Like, that's just not pleasant.
I thought you were going to say the 4 a.m. half four starts
no,
was the difficult part.
No, that
the
was...
The brushing of the hair was the one that... Yeah. Almost drove you away.
Yeah, it was. And like the smell of chlorine, like I was over it. But then I got invited to a competition in Northern Ireland for people with disabilities. And I remember going to it and my first time racing. And I just loved the control of it. I loved feeling in control. And I loved just getting up and going. And turns out I had a talent for it. I had a natural talent for it.
The first time we went up there, I couldn't believe it. She just took to it like a duck to water. And she loved the competition, and she just loved meeting people, you know, like herself and stuff like that. There wasn't many like herself. I think there was only one other girl like herself that was in the pool. But she just felt so natural in there. Yeah, there was no competitions down here for her, like with disability sport. So the IWA had something on, I think, once a year or something like that. And she did that. But no, up there, they were more organised and they treated the swimmers as swimmers, not as people with disability.
How do you find all those long hours of training then at a young age? Because by the sounds of it, you go to Northern Ireland and maybe the competitive instinct kicks in, yeah, and you like that you're in control of your destiny here. But to get there and to keep getting better, like, it's painstaking work.
Yeah. And then as a kid as well, you're not really able to understand why you have to do so much work and why you have to swim every day and why you can't go out and play with friends and why you have so much homework to do and then go swimming and you're just always tired. So I think that's one of probably the hardest parts, I think, of being a swimmer as a kid growing up. But it was always the competitions. I hated training. It was always the competitions that I loved. I went to my first international, maybe when I was 8 years old, I went to my first international in Sheffield. So it was called the DSE Juniors, so Disability Sport England, the juniors. And it was a short course meet. And I came home with 4 silver medals and I was like, so smug. Then the year later, I came home with 2 bronze and was devastated. Like, it was just standing up and competing and being in that flow state. I just loved it.
And are you aware at that stage of what the Paralympics are and what the possibilities for you later in life might be? Are you just going, having fun?
I went to a competition in Wales when I was maybe 11. And like one of the top people in Paralympics Ireland came to watch me swim because they thought that I could make it to Beijing. So I was getting that sort of, I don't know if I'd call it pressure, just I was aware that there was like talks around me from a very young age. And I guess I was just kind of rolling with it. I was just, yeah, we'll just see what happens.
Was it a goal? Like, do you sit down at 11, 12, say, I want to go to Beijing as a 13-year-old and compete at the Paralympics?
No, you don't have that conversation. I guess I was just having fun and I really enjoyed racing and I really enjoyed traveling. Kind of the first big one that I went on, I was 11 and my 12th birthday would be when I was away and we went to South Africa. Went to South Africa for a competition for like 2 weeks. And for my 12th birthday, I got to go to a safari and pet lions. And that was just because of swimming. Later on that year, we were in Maryland.
There was a big competition there. That's where she got her times for the Paralympic Games. So when we're told that over there, oh, she got her times for the Paralympic Games. That means she could be going to the Paralympic Games next year. We just thought it was out of this world. We couldn't believe it, you know? Like, she was only 12 at that stage.
I remember the coach was, like, showing me this document in the world rankings and showing me my time versus qualifying times. And she was talking about Beijing. And I remember even hitting the time and just, it wasn't a big deal to me. What a big deal to me was that I'd beaten the girl in the lane beside me. It wasn't, or that I'd gotten a PB. It wasn't that I'd got the qualifying time. And then the year of Beijing, I was only in first year of school. And I remember getting so stressed out about like the summer exams and my appendix burst. So I ended up having to miss my summer exams, which I was delighted about. But I also remember because my appendix did burst, I was in an ambulance being brought into Temple Street. And I remember just thinking, oh my God, I don't think I'll be able to go to Beijing now. I'm being really upset by it. I thought it was all over, but it wasn't.
Well, obviously, we were very proud that she was picked, but we were, as parents, you were kind of a bit apprehensive at the same time that, you know, is she too young to be getting into this such high level, you know? But she seemed to be coping with it, and because she was coping with it, we kind of fell in line. We never wanted to stop her from doing something, you know, that she wanted to do.
So the first time I would have met Ellen, funnily enough, is outside of swimming. I would have met her through an organisation called REACH, and it's an organisation across the UK and Ireland for people, especially children, with limb deficiencies. This is probably like maybe 2000, 2001. Like I'd say Ellen was 8 max and I was probably about 10 or 11. I suppose there's pros and cons in both ways. I suppose when you're young and you're a young athlete, all these, the pressure passes you by. You don't get caught up and maybe as much in the moment, but then obviously you're lacking the experience at the same time. So I suppose when someone makes it at that age, getting to these major championships, getting to a Paralympic Games in Beijing when she was so young, that really shows the talents that's there. And it shows, it doesn't always guarantee results, but it shows that you're on the right path. You have a natural, serious talent that's there to be built upon.
It was an adventure going off. But then when she got there, I didn't know how she was going to react. You know, would she be homesick? So we were so, so proud of her, you know, really. Never thought, like when she was born, you didn't know what her life was going to be, you know, what opportunities she was going to get. And to see this then going at 13 years of age, representing your country at the biggest thing that you could compete in, it was very proud. We were all very proud.
For me, Beijing was, I was just a kid in an adult world. I felt like I was in Disneyland and everything was so new and exciting. And as I said about all of the whispers of my talent, I remember my teammate who was 14 won a silver medal in Beijing. And I remember somebody saying to me, oh my God, you probably would have won a medal if you didn't burst your appendix. And I was like, oh, like I came sixth at the Paralympics at 13 and it wasn't good enough. And I remember like coming home through Dublin Airport and all the fuss being made about the athletes who had won the medals. And like, no one cared about me anymore. And I just remember being like, what do I have to do to be wanted? And like, I was still 13 in Beijing and nobody cared anymore. I remember somebody saying to me, the Paralympic Games is like being in a fishbowl and everyone's just looking at you. And that's the only comment I remember being told about the games. And then I went from that hype to going to secondary school, just going straight back into second year. And because no one knew what the Paralympics was, it was still a growing sport. I just, like, nobody cared. I went from, like, everyone caring to nobody caring in an instant. If someone did say something about the games, they'd be like, oh, she went to the Olympics. She went to the Olympics. And all about, oh, do you know this person? Do you know that person? Did you meet Michael Phelps? And I'd be like, no, I didn't meet Michael Phelps. But you were swimming in the Olympics. How did you not meet Michael Phelps? And I was like, because I didn't go to the Olympics. I'm not an Olympian. And they're like, what do you mean? And then I'd have to explain Paralympics. And then it would all be about, oh my God, she's disabled. So it was nearly easier for me to shrink myself and make myself smaller and less than, so I didn't have to have that conversation. It was the constant explaining and constant justifying myself and explaining who I was. And it just drained me so much.
As she got older, you could, especially when she started hitting the teenage years, most teenagers have hang-ups about different things anyway. So you're apprehensive about any child coming into the teenage years. She missed out on an awful lot of normal teenage things. And the fact that she had this hang-up and she was going around in the middle of the summer with these long sleeve jumpers covering up her arm, she didn't really open up about how she felt. Like we knew she was, we tried to talk to her about different things, about how she was feeling and all this, about all her things. But she never really opened up about, even though we tried to explain that we were there, anything she needed to discuss and all that. But it was only later on that we discovered how hung up that she was feeling and how down in herself that she was feeling. And as a parent, that was hard actually to read about or to hear her about in interviews, to hear it.
And then when it came to swimming and my training and my competing, I just couldn't motivate myself, because any time I stood up on the block to race, it's, what's the point? Like, why am I here at this club gala? Like,
how long did that last?
A solid 2 years, and then I went to boarding school in England. So after my junior cert, I went to boarding school in England in Kelly College. And my coach was one of the head coaches of British para swimming. And he had coached girls that I race against. They had a few Paralympians in the club as well. And that kind of helped me get excited again and get focused, because also I was in England, so that's where the Olympics were going to be. And there was a girl who I was swimming with, Lauren Steadman, who went on to win gold in para tri in Tokyo, but she had the same arm as me, and she was so confident and so carefree and so proud of who she was, and I wasn't like that. I was still so insecure about my arm and my body, and just to be like with her and near her and see how she lived her life in her body, like, it gave me hope that I don't think I ever really had. And my second year, my coach had to get a hip replacement, and he wasn't my coach anymore. It was nearly like people forgot that the games were coming. So when it came to the games itself, I didn't swim well. It was like I was completely burnt out. I realized that my coach, the coach that I had, just didn't care anymore. And so London 2012 was such a disappointment, because I had all this pressure on me to perform and to succeed and to win a medal, because it's a home games. And I made two finals, I think, and came last in the finals. When it comes to sport, sometimes people cannot see clearly, can't see that this is a 17-year-old kid. Like, you screaming at me isn't going to make me faster, isn't going to make me better. Like, I need help here. And it's also like, back then, like, mental health wasn't talked about. Like, and that was only just over 10 years ago. Like, that's not that long ago. And people didn't even consider that mental health could be an impact, could be something that affects your sport. I didn't have someone really guiding me and helping me. All I had was this expectation and pressure. And that's what all I could think about when I was in London, was the pressure.
Ups and downs into it as well. An awful lot of disappointments for her as well, that things didn't go the way that you'd want them to go. And as a parent watching that, you felt her hurt, knowing how hard that she had trained and the sacrifices that had to be made.
You're talking 9 pool sessions per week, all of them are 2 hours, so that's 18 hours of swimming. Then you add on maybe 3-4 hours of gym, then you add on your dry land stretching, your Pilates, you add on your physio. You're talking 25 hours plus a week easy of hardcore dedicated training, and everyone's doing it. That's just what it takes to become a high-performance, world-class athlete. You have to put in the mileage.
When I came home, I just knew I needed to make a change. And that's when I ended up moving club to Dave. And what ended up happening with Dave was Dave just started, gave me a clean slate, and I could start from scratch. And no coach that I'd ever worked with before had just said, okay, let's just begin again. And sometimes you need that.
I hadn't realised all that had gone on in that period. And even those ages in that four-year cycle are the times of, you know, real dropout. And, you know, we're talking about beating the drop in those key periods, particularly for young girls, the transition from primary school to secondary school and then to college. So many people, that's the moment where actually they decide, I've just had enough of this.
Yeah.
What was it that somehow kept you going back?
What was it that helped you stop the drop?
Jeez, you're going to make me cry, Nathan. Yeah, I know how to ask
Take your time.
What kept me going back was how good I was as a kid before the madness happened, and how much I loved competing before the madness happened, and like the freedom I felt when I raced before the pressure started. And it's so weird, like, as a kid, like, even when I was in Rio in 2016, I saw it with Nicole, because Nicole was 14 in Rio. When you're a kid and you're competing, you don't know what pressure is. You just know that you love racing, and you love trying your all and giving your best. And it's only when people ask you, are you nervous? And you're like, I don't know, should I be nervous? Maybe I should be nervous. And how are you handling the pressure? And then you're like, what pressure? I didn't know there was pressure. And that's when you start to realize all of these things. And then it was only after Beijing that I was like, oh, I'm the hopes and the dreams. They've put all of their eggs on me. Like, my dad was the only one who asked me if this is what I wanted to do when I was like 7 years old. But no one asked me if I wanted to keep going, if I wanted to go to the Paralympics, if I wanted to win a gold medal. It was always just, Ellen will win a gold medal. Ellen, you have to train, you have to do this, you have to do that. And no one really showed me how to do it. It was just all, you have to, you have to, you have to. And why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And I also had like no athlete in my life that showed me what it took. And I guess that's what I take as a responsibility being the oldest athlete now is I get asked a lot, oh, do athletes come to you for advice? And no, they don't. But it's important you lead by example and you show them without them having to ask. They don't know what questions to ask. They don't know what the answer is. They don't know what the question is. And they just need to see you being your best self and your best athletic self. And then hopefully they'll realize, oh, maybe I do need to turn up a little bit earlier to do my stretches. Maybe I do need to eat straight after training. And it's just me doing the things all along that hopefully they'll pick it up.
So like, I'm sure you've spoken to probably people who are around you then. Like, when you talk to your parents about it now, like, do you wish you'd come home? Do you wish you'd skipped London? Should you have taken a year out?
To be honest, if I could go back in time, I wouldn't have gone to Beijing because I didn't like have a Europeans. I didn't have a world championships. I needed to be a kid. Mm. I went from being a kid who loved racing to being a high performance athlete in like 2 years. Like, that's ridiculous. I got drug tested for the first time when I was 10. And my first drug tester announced as they were testing me that they were the ones who caught Michelle Smith. Like, what?
She would be taken off. Somebody would be watching her, but I'd have to stand watching them, watching her, because I had to be obviously to protect your own child so young. And that used to happen quite regularly when they'd come here for the doping and all till she was at an age where I didn't have to be there. It's very hard to watch, especially the very first time it happened.
I won my first major internationals when I was in 2013, so when I was 18. And then I had my leaving cert. I didn't win any medals in 2014. 2015, I won medals at World Championships. So 2016, it was my third games. I was like, okay, they expect me to win a medal. I have to win a medal. If I don't win a medal, how can I justify being an elite athlete? How can I, like, all this work I've done has been such a waste if I don't win a medal here? And that was my mindset going into the games. So I was like crumbling going into Rio in 2016. And my first event was the 200 medley. And I completely bombed it. I went out way too fast. Like, I went out so fast. I'm still so impressed that I went out that fast. But I just couldn't bring it home. And then everyone was just so disappointed in me. And nobody could see how much I was struggling. Like, there was just so much blame on me all the time. And then for my breaststroke, Russia had been banned. But the gold medalist and the world record holder from London and Beijing was Russian. She wasn't in Rio. The only reason I won a bronze medal in Rio is because Russia weren't there. And I knew that there was an opportunity and I just was able somehow to switch my brain to just being in the moment. Now, I didn't get a PB, but I got a bronze medal. And I was just relieved more than anything that I'd finally done something to bring home and to take that pressure off me. But that's the one big thing that I started working on after 2016 was my thoughts and my mindset and my mental health, because that was the reason I was failing, is because I was so unhappy.
When she won her bronze in Rio in 2016, oh my God, we just couldn't believe it, you know, and we were roaring and crying and trying to kiss each other and jumping around and everything like that, and everyone was congratulating us. And we had the whole side of our place where we were in Rio everyone was cheering on Ellen Keane. Oh, it was unbelievable, mad, you know.
What I would have seen afterwards was really a new Ellen, that she really doubled down. But the difference when she stood up and got the bronze medal in Rio, and that was really setting the stage for Tokyo and onwards.
So considering everything that you went through and everything that you sacrificed, describe the moment that you lift your head and you look up and you see it's your name in first place in Tokyo.
So my goggles filled with water when I dove in. And I think it was nearly a blessing because I couldn't see what was going on. And I just had to focus. Like, one of my senses had been taken from me. So I just had to focus on the senses that I did have. And you don't really have hearing in the water. You just have feel. So I could just feel my strokes so well. And I just pushed myself so much that when I finished and I took my goggles off, I could see the first thing I saw was two lights on the block beside me, which was the girl in the lane beside me. And she was the only one who I knew was capable of beating me. So if she had two lights, it meant that I had one light. And I remember just seeing the two lights on her block and being like, oh my God. So it was also relief, but it was a different kind of relief. It was more of like, in Rio, it was relief that, okay, I've finally done something, they'll be happy. Whereas in Tokyo, it was like, I knew I could do it, relief. And it was just a state of like lightness and happiness. And yeah, I think winning the gold medal for me was just a quiet triumph that I just felt like I was completely myself in that moment. And I was like at the peak of my mental health. That's what that felt like. Even if I'd won a silver medal, I knew that I was in such a good place in my life that winning the gold medal was kind of the only outcome that could have happened.
We were here for the gold medal for Tokyo, and it was just amazing. Absolutely, the whole community around were just amazing. Not just the community around, like we were getting, she was getting cards in the post addressed like Ellen Keane, Paralympic swimmer, no address, but it still got here, thanks to our great postman.
What's it like for you when you clear out the goggles, you realise you've achieved? Whether, and obviously Tokyo was a difficult experience because of COVID, but you know, when you've had big victories along the way and you've won medals and you see them in their green suits, green Irish suits standing out, what does it mean to have achieved for them as well?
Like representing your country and then being able to win a gold medal, it's just Irish people are so grateful. And anything could be happening in the world. Anything could be happening in the country. And sport has the ability to really uplift people. So to be able to do that for my family and to be able to give them that joy and to be able to share that with their friends and the rest of their family, it's so special. And that's the power of sport. Mm. And that's why we do it. And that's why we get so excited about it.
You do seem to have a great appreciation of your position and the inspiration side of it. You know, you've spoken there, you didn't have that role model, and you now are that to so many people. Does it get tiring ever? You always have to be on.
Yeah, it does get tiring, and that's why I like to have two small dogs that keep me company all the time, and they're what I look after because I feel like I don't have to communicate with them. No, but yeah, it does. But you can make someone's day by just being nice to them for 10 minutes and having a chat with them for 10 minutes. And then I love just going home and being a sloth like most normal people do.
I suppose the word inspiration is overused a lot of the time in disability sports, in disability rights and stuff like that. But it is truly an inspiration in terms of how Ellen has come true, how her career has taken off. And the role model she's become really now, she's really taken off hugely. And all these young kids that with a disability that might not have had a role model with a disability before in sport. And now they're seeing the likes of Ellen who are getting her brand across there and inspiring future generations to get into sport.
A lot of the kids down her local school down here, she's a star to them. You know, she's not Ellen Keane. She's Ellen Keane the swimmer, or Ellen Keane the speaker, or Ellen Keane the dancer. You know, she's an awful lot of tags on her now. You know, which is great. It's not just the swimming. People really love seeing who she is. You know, she's not somebody with a disability who can't do anything. She's just somebody who can do everything. It's just that she has a disability on the side. And that's the way she lives her life.
We're so proud. We're so, so proud of what she's achieved in the pool. But we're even more proud, I think, of what she's achieved out of it. Because she might be... We mightn't see that much of her here, you know, between all the things that she's doing, training and all the other things that she's involved in. But that's Ellen. She's given so much of herself to support other people, whether they have a disability or they haven't got a disability, because we all have insecurities.
It does feel as though there's just been such a total transformation about how we talk about the Paralympics. And can you talk about that and where it was, as much as you could appreciate in Beijing, and how London seemed to change things maybe forever, and what it means for the athletes and the opportunities that are there for you now compared to when you were starting?
I think it's because people know what it is now, and because there's the equality in terms of I'm on the same funding as Kelly Harrington. I have a Paralympic gold medal. She has an Olympic gold medal, same funding. There's the respect aspect to it. And when the respect is there, I guess it pushes you to be better. Kind of what I struggled with as well as a teenager was because no one really knew what it was, because there wasn't a lot of investment in terms of people respecting it, like there was hardly any sponsors. I at times would just be like, what is the point in this? Like this is just a bunch of people going for a swim who have a disability. Like this, why am I wasting my time doing this? But when people get invested in sport, it gives the respect aspect to it. It makes people want it more. It makes people work harder.
From a personal circumstance, I know that it's tough. Being a child with a disability, you're shy, you don't always fit in. So seeing these kids embracing their disability because they've seen Ellen on the TV, they've seen her on the news, they've seen her competing, that is massive. Now, the Paralympic movement as a whole has stepped up massively. The Paralympic movement in Ireland has stepped up massively. The media interest, the public interest, it builds cycle on cycle, which is, it's great to see, and long may it continue and continue to build. The Paralympic movement, I suppose, needs that little bit more. Because it's coming from a different base to, let's say, the Olympic movement, which has been around a hell of a lot longer, back to ancient Greece. There was no Paralympic Games in ancient Greece, I can tell you that. If you ask 99% of people, what is the Paralympics? It's the parallel Olympics. I see all surveys going around and people ask the question, what does it mean? You get paraplegic, you get all sorts of different answers, but it's a parallel Olympics, and that's what we need to get to. And recognising phenomenal athletes like Ellen is how we get there and how we build it.
And it's the movement... It's going to change a lot of people's lives, but it's also just so important to acknowledge that not every disabled person wants to be a Paralympian or has the capacity to be a Paralympian. Some people who, there's disability sport, there's para sport, and then there's Paralympics. So disability sport could just be people playing a game of basketball who are in wheelchairs. And then para sport is people in wheelchairs playing basketball in a league, competing. So that's para sport. And then it's those people in wheelchairs competing in the Paralympics is Paralympian. And you need to like build that up to get to that point. You don't just automatically qualify because you're disabled.
Qualifying for the Paralympics is an enormous achievement
it's
in
hard.
Itself. And it's getting harder, and it's going to get harder and harder.
It's getting harder. And when people don't give a second thought to how difficult it is, it really undermines the people who don't make it. Oh God, that's the hardest part about the Games, I think. The Olympics and the Paralympics is watching the athletes who have trained for 4 years, if not longer, not make it.
Yeah, and you're seeing them.
You're seeing them. And then you have to leave them behind. That's heartbreaking. And you are probably there because of them, because they were your training partner. They pushed you when you were struggling during a set. They showed up with you every day. They made you work hard, and you have to leave them behind. So sport is great, but sport is also awful sometimes.
If you look post Tokyo, you know, you've done Dancing with the Stars, you've written a book, you know, you're out and about, you're enjoying life probably more, it seems, certainly publicly, than you would have the previous cycles.
Yeah.
Come the end of Paris, are you going to be satisfied no matter what the result?
Yeah, I am. As long as I remain happy and in the moment and I do it properly, then I'm going to be satisfied. I think I never gave myself a lot of time to reflect on how far I've come. And just as I've gotten older and towards the end of my career, I just realize all the memories that I've had. And I'm just, I know it's towards the end, so I want to make sure it's a good final memory.
When she stands for the last time, please God, all go well. I think she's more happier in herself going into this. She has accepted that she's retiring. And I think she's going to love it for her last games. Maybe going back to the innocence that she had in her first games.
I know she will do quite well. And I know she'll be very emotional at the end. And no matter where she gets, she will be happy because she's put an awful lot of work into it.
Make sure that when she steps out of the pool in her last race, there's nothing she could have done else. It's going to be everything left in the pool, and that's what it's all about.
I'm probably going to have to really concentrate on not thinking about it being my last one, because I'll get too emotional about it then. And I'll be like, oh my God, it's all over. This is so bittersweet. Yeah, I'm just going to enjoy the last one, like, because that's the last time that I'm going to be, hopefully, in that physical peak. I'm never going to be that strong, I'm never going to be that fast, I'm never going to be that fit again.
How does that sit with you, that you hopefully will go out at being the best in the world at something? And it's very hard to be the best in the world at two things. So it might be the last time you're the best in the world at something at 28. Even that idea of being that absolute elite, that 1% in any given thing, you're at that right now. That's a very hard thing to follow on from for the rest of your life. Have you thought about that as to just being normal?
No. Like, I don't think of that. I just think, the reason, my thought process in Tokyo was, this is my job. I just have to do my job well. So that's what Paris is. I just have to do my job. I just have to show up and do my job. And when it comes to emotions, they're great and all, but they get in the way. And when you romanticize sport too much, it gets in the way. And that's, I think, the hurdle that a lot of us fall at a lot of the time, because we think of how great it will be when, instead of just being in the moment and getting your job done.
There's athletes that you talk to in this job that you come away when they're at the end of their career and you're concerned as to what will be next for them. I have to say, I find talking to you that it's quite exciting to think of what's going to come next for you, and that you seem quite excited about what's next.
Yeah, I'm relaxed. I'm ready for something new. I guess my biggest fear in life is not growing, not experiencing, and standing still. And I guess that's why I'm very much ready to move on, because I've finally reached the top, and now I want to experience that in a full stadium close to home with my family and my friends. And then there's nothing else for me to do, so I'm ready to try something new. So I'm excited, yeah.
Garnacho wins it for United and passes to Lamine Yamal of Barcelona. He flicks it on to Arsenal's Katie McCabe. Oh, what a cross to Mbappe at Real Madrid, who picks out Haaland!
Get more live football than ever before with Sky Sports, TNT Sports and Premier Sports. With every live Premier League game, exclusive European football and much more. Sky is where it all happens. Go to sky.ie/sports to join or upgrade today. Terms and conditions apply.